From the Rust Center for Media in downtown Cape Girardeau, welcome to Focus on Southeast, a monthly program on issues and events impacting the campus of Southeast Missouri State University. I'm Dan Woods with KRCU Public Radio. Today we're talking with Southeast President Carlos Vargas. We'll be discussing a new minor in Spanish for the Health Professions Support Net, Southeast Student Success Network, and we'll talk about the Missouri Department of Education's recent facility review of Missouri's public colleges and universities. Dr. Vargas, good to see you again.
Good to see you, Danny. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Always a good time. Let's start talking about Southeast Diagnosis and Treatment Center with Autism has expanded or will expand into the Sikeston region. This is going to be good news for folks in the Boot Heel.
It is. I think this is the result of the fact that the center has determined that there are a number of families, actually, that have to come from south of Cape, and and some of them, they have to travel, of course, and sometimes the children have to be exposed to treatment for about 15 hours a week or so. And so, I mean, they're not only children, but in general, conclusion was that establishing some operation in the Sikeston area was going to be a good thing to do. So,
I think that starts in January.
It starts in January, yes, and it's going to be the period of time that they're going to be open initially is going to be somewhat limited. It's going to be from 9 to noon, Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. Eventually, the hope is to be able to do 9 to 5 or 4 in the afternoon every day of the week. Mm-hmm. But right now, for the time being, it's going to be only those 3 days in the morning.
And I read that there are very few behavior analysts or autism specialty providers in the Boot Heel area. So this is, speaks to a real need there. And I guess the university has our applied behavior analysis and speech-language pathology programs, which sort of feed into this to help students prepared to be able to do this type of work where there is a need, not only here, but in other areas too.
I think this the program you mentioned, the applied behavior analysis and also the speech-language pathology, these are very valuable programs. Applied behavior analysis is a program that we just started recently, and it's been the result of the recognition that those professions are very, very badly needed in many areas, and certainly in the Boot Heel is one an area. We have, apparently, there's only 10 or so of applied behavior analysts in the greater Boot Heel region. So there are not that many. So providing the opportunity for people to develop those credentials is extremely important.
Very good news for those folks. So that's coming in January.
Yes.
Let's move on to another story that that caught my interest because of the headline was that you delivered admittance packets via drone to seniors in Richland. So did you get to fly the drone?
I did not get to fly the drone because I don't have the pilot's license. And, you know, in order to get the pilot license, you have to take a course. And you have to pass the test.
So I guess presidential power doesn't, you still have to have a license too.
It did not help. I'm looking forward to taking the course myself because I really would like to get the license to fly them. But it was an exciting opportunity because we went to Richland High School in Essex, and it turns out that they are themselves starting a drone program. And they already acquired, I believe, 4 drones that they have in there. And so we thought, well, you know, we have an unmanned aircraft systems program that allows students to get a bachelor's degree in that field. And so we thought, what a better thing to do than it is to go and deliver the admissions package through a drone. And that's exactly what we did. We had 2 students that received their admissions package delivered by one of our drones. And, of course, the person who was flying the drone was a pilot from the university.
Who had a license.
Yes, who has a license. And so so we were very excited to do that. The interesting thing is we've been talking about the importance of having a program on unmanned aircraft systems, again, normally called drones. And now you have in high schools that are getting into this field, because the reality is that there are many, many areas where drones are going to be used and are being used right now these days. So job opportunities for people who can know how to operate, how, modify and apply these this technology to different fields is a very important one.
If I remember right, at least in Missouri, we were the first institution to have a program like this, right?
We are actually the first one, the first and the only one.
So no one else yet.
Nobody yet. So that's coming, I'm sure.
Of course, but.
But in the meantime, we're going to have to continue to innovate. But our program, we're very, very excited about that.
Well, it's neat to think that this high school is involved in the drone unmanned systems program as well. I'm sure there are other high schools that are probably either looking at starting it and doing the same sort of thing.
I'm assuming so, because drones is one of those areas. Technology is one that's very appealing to children and adults these days. When I was little, I always dreamt. I actually had dreams of flying over mountains, mounted on a little like a personal helicopter. And of course, these days you have people flying drones individually, and so you know they are carried by drones. And it's an exciting thing. It's very appealing to individuals. And now we have, as you know, we have clubs that actually have formed to do races using drones.
Yeah, I heard something about drone races. I think that's an intriguing idea. It has to be really something interesting to see.
It's not that dissimilar to, remember this movie Harry Potter, where they had this Quidditch game.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Now, of course, you're flying on a broomstick there, but here the drones are so small, you actually can go around. It's very, very interesting. I haven't done, of course, that myself, so I need to get into that.
I really like that we worked in a Harry Potter reference during our program. That's the first time we've done that.
So yes.
Very good. So let's move on to a new minor in Spanish for the health professions.
Yes.
And I think this is fall 2019. I know that this is a need just because of some programming we've done on KRCU that sometimes when folks maybe who speak Spanish go to a hospital in our region, there's a communication barrier there, and this will help to alleviate that, as I understand it.
It will, and it's a very interesting idea. Let me just give you an example of how I actually came in contact with this need. When I was a faculty member in Ohio, we had a college of nursing at the university, and the dean of the college one day called me and asked me if my daughter could go with them to a nearby location, a small town, because they were helping the people there. The nurses were going there to help the community, and many of them did not speak English. And so they wanted my daughter to go with them and help them translate and interpret. And so even at that time, which is now about 20 years ago, the need was starting to surface. You know, how do you communicate with individuals that don't speak the language about medical issues? And so I am so pleased that we have the faculty here that have recognized that need and decided to address it through this minor. So Spanish for the health professionals is an exciting an exciting area of work, and I'm hoping that we'll have many students actually getting into that program.
So you have the language barrier to begin with, but then sometimes explaining medical things can be complex too. So you've got several things kind of in the mix.
It's
there.
Not only the language; it's actually knowing how do you communicate certain feelings, pain, discomfort. It's an interesting thing.
And the Bureau of Labor Statistics has said that bilingual employees are in demand and make higher salaries in the same profession than monolingual speakers. So
there is no doubt about that. I must confess, my daughter, who by the time she finished college, she spoke three languages, has experienced what it means to be appealing for potential employers when you have various languages that you master. It is absolutely true in the business community right now. If you do have another language, you are being selected as part of that small group that they look at, because they want to have the ability to have you communicate with people from other cultures and other countries.
So it's an important skill to have, and it makes you more marketable.
Yes, and so what we need to do is let our students in college recognize that Sometimes people say, well, languages are very difficult, you know.
Right.
But there is a definite benefit. If you speak another language, there's a definite benefit in terms of your professional career. So they should consider learning another language. If they can do it even starting from high school, that's the best thing to do, and just follow it while you're in college.
I think they say the earlier you start, the better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think there was a feeling in the past that starting languages very, very early was not good because they needed to give you the time to concentrate on one language. That's not the case.
Yeah.
You want to bombard the children with a lot of different languages. They'll pick it up.
They'll pick it up. That's right.
Yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit about SupportNet, mm-hmm. Southeast Student Success Network. So first, tell us what it is.
SupportNet is an automated system that allows us to connect with the students using technology in a more effective way. It's a way to automate many of the processes that we have in place, scheduling appointments, communicating among the faculty and the advisors when a student needs some help, for the student to schedule meetings or appointments. It's just a variety of different functions that this system automates to make our communication with students more effective and more efficient. And the idea, because it does deal with advising, so it allows the students to communicate with their advisors more effectively and the advisors to do the same with the students, it has an impact on our ability to promote student success. So retention, graduation, communication with students to make sure that they have access and quick access to answers that they need in order to make decisions.
Is it a computer program? Is it software that does this?
Right. There's a company called Hobsons, and they have this software called Starfish, and it's a software developed specifically to take advantage of technology to enhance communication among the various offices and the university and the students. So it's all aimed at simplifying and facilitating the process that students have to go through to get answers to some of the questions that they have.
So rather than trying to find the number for financial aid or the number for your advisor or the number for whatever office, you can use this system and it's just there and it's quick.
That's exactly right. So you take your cell phone, you connect, and then you leave a message to an advisor. The advisor can send you a message. The advisor can communicate with somebody like maybe a professional advisor who can work with the student to make sure that they have answers. The other thing that it does is it allows the faculty members to produce alerts. When a student, for example, is falling behind in a class, the faculty member can actually communicate to a professional advisor and say, you know, there's a person here that may not be doing that well, may have some problems. Could you communicate? Or maybe you're missing the student. Maybe the student is not showing up for class.
Okay.
So all these things are flags that we can raise that help us make sure that we communicate with the students and say to the student, you need to pay attention to this. Maybe you're missing something here. So.
And this is, it's a new system, I guess, and they're still, mm-hmm. it's in phase one, maybe, I guess. Phase two's coming pretty soon.
Yes.
So what more can be, what else is going to be added to this, I guess, beyond what you just described?
Right. Well, we have a number of different stages that we are going through. Right now, we have, the first thing that we needed to do, of course, was to implement the system, to launch it. Now we're going through the process of training our faculty and staff.
Okay.
We're going to be having given access to the faculty advisors also to make sure that they know how to operate it. So when they have access to it, then they're going to be able to do it very quickly. It's just a training, a normal training. We're going to be rolling it out to beginning freshmen in the near future so that they start getting the opportunity to use it.
So as soon as they come in, immediately they're going to learn this from the very beginning.
Yes, during the orientation program, our first step program, they're going to know about this. Okay. They're already knowing about it, but now the point is how do you introduce the students and give them the training and the opportunity to learn. The students, of course, are going to probably have a very easy time getting comfortable with it because they're using their phones and systems all the time.
Right.
So our staff and faculty are going to have to figure out how they communicate with each other in optimizing the use.
Okay. So this will be, and from what I read from the later phase, there's analytics, and I guess there's all kinds of data that can be pulled out of this system
because
too.
Of the fact that it's all automated, we're going to be able to look at data and use those data to make decisions regarding the interaction with the students. What are the kinds of things we need to be aware of that the students are having problems? So it allows you to collect the data and present it in a form of a dashboard or so that you can quickly see what are the things that we need to be paying more attention to.
Is this unique to, are we the only institution to use this, or is this something that's broad-based that a lot of institutions use?
There are many institutions that are, increasingly institutions are relying on this. There are still institutions that don't use an automated system like this. There are a number of providers out there that actually can purchase the system from. We did an analysis, we did an evaluation, we had providers come and make a presentation about the features of the system. And there are different levels of the cost for the system. So we did that and eventually settled on this one.
Ultimate goal is to help the students be successful, to increase retention and graduation rates when you get right down to it.
Ultimately, that is exactly right. We're going to be able to, as you know, we have this 80% goal for retention for the first time, full-time freshmen. Our graduation rates, we want to go up to 60%. These are goals that we have. We're not quite there yet. But we're hoping that this system is going to be an important factor in helping us reach that point.
Very interesting.
So, mm-hmm.
So I'd like to spend the rest of the program talking about the Missouri Department of Higher Education's facility review that they did of Missouri's public colleges and universities during this past summer, 2018. They wanted to try to get a state of the state of education facilities, mm-hmm. and they did this review. And so they looked at universities' master plans that they had, and they want to look at enrollment trends and projections on all kinds of data. So I'm curious, what kind of state are we in as far as facilities and things here at the university?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say it's difficult to answer that question. There are some of our buildings or facilities that are in very good condition, but there are some other ones that are not. And so we have institutions typically speak about the maintenance and repair budgets that they need to make sure that buildings and facilities in general are operating in a proper way. We also have a term called deferred maintenance. Deferred maintenance is maintenance that we know has to occur, but we have not been able to actually do it due to lack of resources. I am very happy, and I think most presidents and universities, I mean all presidents and universities are very happy that the Department of Higher Education has engaged in this process, because I think facilities and their condition are such an important factor in facilitating the learning process of students. It's not something that you normally think of, but the reality is increasingly how well-conditioned your classrooms and your laboratories are to make sure that the learning takes place is very important. And so in many cases, some of the universities are having some very serious issues. Some people may have read, there's been an article in the paper a day or two ago where they actually talked about this report.
Mm-hmm.
And the cost that actually for the state is over $1 billion, B with the billion with a B.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that the state is looking at this and trying to think about how do we address the repair and the maintenance that has to occur in our facilities. After all, we're public institutions, so the facilities can be considered part of the facilities that the state owns.
You think about the size, the 64 buildings, there's millions of square feet of facilities. There's mm-hmm. a lot to take care of. And, of course, we have our campus, our main campus, we have our river campus, and mm-hmm. we have Sykeston and the other regional campuses, too. So there's a lot to look after.
There is a lot to look after. And that's there's also what you see when you're walking around campus and what you don't see, which is underneath. And at CAPE, for example, we have tunnels.
Mm-hmm.
And these tunnels are used to communicate from one building to another, and that's why you You route pipes, you route electrical wires, you like the fiber optic for the network and all that. And if the condition of those tunnels is not good, then you can have difficulties with some of the other systems, water going from one building to another, mm-hmm. and so on. So it's very important. And the other thing that is also important is the perception of the students. If they come to institutions like universities or so, or community colleges, you name it, and then they don't find that the facilities are in good state, and they feel that we are not really caring about that, and that is not the case. No. Sometimes it's just the lack of the resources needed to make sure that they are kept at the right.
We probably got about 90 seconds, but this is one of those things that's challenging because you can't really go for donor fundraising for this type of thing. You really rely on the state to help do a lot of this maintenance because, as you noted, there are public buildings.
Right, and it's difficult to get donor support for something like this. Donors really typically want to see something that is very directly tied to student learning. The assumption is that this is something we need to take care of. The facilities, the institution should be able to take care of that. So that's where I'm glad that the state is paying attention to this, because that's something where we need some help.
And hopefully there'll be some money to come down the pipe to help do all this work that needs to be done.
There's been some money in the past. It's just not been able to be there on a consistent basis.
Right. Well, Dr. Vargas, thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much, Danny. It's a good time to be here.